neurosis and anxiety are the result of something. They're not indigenous to your psyche. You see?
They're indigenous to being.
Well, normal doesn't mean anything. Human doesn't mean anything. Right? It's a shorthand, which refers to something that's too complex and too magnificent to be boxed by the word normal or the word human. Right? Your experience is a dynamic environment. It's an atmosphere. It's a spectrum. And anxiety and apprehension, neurosis, is not indigenous.
In the environment, you mean?
There is no human condition. Your presence, which is, you could say, a purity, an untarnished purity of availability. Anxiety, neurosis, apprehension, combative or afflictive thinking is not indigenous to experiencing. So it might be worthwhile to see, well, oh my goodness, how might the story of me, which seems to be accompanied by a lot of anxiety and neurosis and small thinking and manipulation and storytelling, how does my near 24/7 experience become so enamored of or influenced by fantasy? When my actual condition is not visited upon by these afflictions.
The afflictions seem almost irresistible. There's that real gravity factor toward them, like toward the suffering. You get a little whisper of guilt, remorse, or recrimination. And it's like, go in. Or it sucks you.
What creates the remorse or the recrimination in the first place? Right? It's not... It doesn't... You could say it doesn't grow on trees.
Something happened to you. You have to do something about it.
You see, that's what we're looking at, is the... Call it the geometry or the mechanics of associative factors which blot out your actual experience, blot it out, and replace it with fantasy, referential fantasy, imagination.
I think the self actually needs that to stay in business.
Well, there's no self other than that. If there's a so-called suffering self or lowercase self, it is that. Fantasy and imagination is not an accoutrement of an independently existing self. Fantasy is the genesis of the separately existing self. They're the same. You can't find a self. A self is an imaginary abstraction. Here's what you find. Here's what you find. And all of these afflictions are not indigenous to this. You can fall out of a tree and break your arm, or fail to run faster than a saber-toothed tiger. Now that could be a real shitstorm.
I got attacked by a house cat the other day.
Okay.
Imagine that. Yeah.
But even if your, call it, physicality is injured, perhaps even seriously, the loss of limbs, the loss of brain tissue, right? You go into a coma, or you become a multiple amputee. Or, perhaps better than that, you lose your life. You know, you're gobbled to death by a creature or an automobile.
So uplifting.
Or falling from a great height.
So good now.
I mean, even in all of the things that occur to, right, this complexity, this rich complexity, are those problems?
They're not really problems when I look back at the dream I had the other night, involving torture and blood and guns.
No.
Looking at it now, it wasn't a problem.
We are commonly overwhelmed by the imagination of some kind of interference event or interference pattern or emotional frustration. And all of that is imaginary. It's not indigenous. I won't go so far as Paul Hederman to say it's parasitic, but I think that's a little over the top.
I don't know.
You know, because parasitic suggests... Parasitic suggests a you that could be rid of the parasite.
Right. And then travel later.
And then travel lighter, which is, you know, absurd. But I'm not saying that's a bad... It's a bad thing to sell to somebody working with loud affliction, right? Loud addiction. Loud behavioral problems. I mean, like, maybe Bill Cosby could use a little traveling lighter. But you can see how much loyalty we place in the imagination of an afflictible self, and then frame most of our experience through the lens of the afflictible self. And what do we find? More and better affliction. And if we go to the expo, wherever the expo is, whoever's speaking.
I like that story about the expo. I think that in the expo, I'm going to work with my brother instead. I've decided laying floors just as valuable.
If we go to the expos to ameliorate our sorrow and our grief and our suffering, we're still only working superficially. Like if we do tapping or EMT, right? Stuff that works. It does work.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, maybe you were a little too far to the right.
I've been punching myself in the top of my head lately for 10 minutes works for me, so it's pretty simple. Beating myself over the head for 10 minutes like this, that works really well.
I do better with those ghost
pepper chips. Yeah, there you go. Do that and hit yourself on the head, and you'll be like seeing double.
I slapped myself silly one time.
Everyone should clean man's house.
I mean, stuff works.
Yeah, stuff works.
For a while.
Some
people for a while, depending on the, you know, who the teacher is, how much they paid, whether they fell in love during the retreat or had an affair or, you know, stuff works. But you'll notice.
A whole other thing, yeah.
But you'll notice how we're forced we're forced to come back over and over and over and over again. Whether it's to the somatic therapist, the psychiatric therapist, the past life regression therapist, the soothsayer that's reading our palms or our tea leaves. We come back over and over and over again. Because the inventory and the wave of affliction appearing to an afflictively oriented being is never ending. It's very generous. It's abundant. Now, you'd think it maybe would take 3 weeks to figure this out. But it takes 30 lifetimes to figure this out. Yeah, I know, it's funny, you know, you think 3 weeks would be enough. 3 hours maybe if it was an intensive. I mean, how many intensives did what's her name from Siddha Yoga sell? Right? Muktananda's, protege that stole the ashram and had her brother outed for sex crimes and got control of the whole thing. Chidvalasananda, yeah. How many intensives did she broadcast from Pune, India, or wherever? You know, to the tune of $300 a pop for the weekend, broadcast in by satellite all over the world to, you know, groups of hundreds at the same time. I mean, talk about ka-ching. And people went, some of them went to more than one intensive. And I don't know if any of them got anything at all from a single intensive. They were intense, though. I mean, look how resilient dupable consciousness is. You'd think in 3 weeks you could say, whoa, something really weird is going on here. I think I better shift up my strategy. But we don't. We go decades. Yeah. You know, Eric Pearl and everyone that Eric Pearl heals, they're going to die.
You're all going to die, motherfuckers.
It doesn't mean that if you're suffering and someone lends you a healing, helping hand, you know, there's no point in refusing it. Well, it's not so much about, you know, choice. I mean, because choice...
sound that way, I think, is what I'm getting at. Because I feel like that comes back a lot. It's like the, well, okay, you're saying everything does itself, and then you're saying, like, there's something you can do about it, in a sense.
Yeah,
it's not native. It's not, you know, indigenous. know.
You don't want to take out the big kabam and flatline everybody. Because it's... I mean, having no choice is a big hammer, right? And if you take out a big hammer like there's no choice, then that it can interfere. Yeah, it can interfere with the nuance of really exploring yourself. Because you can explore yourself. You can do it. Now, how is it possible that you can explore yourself profoundly and intimately, affectionately, with loads of wonder and frustration and guilt and all kinds of crazy feelings, and still say, well, you have no choice? It's like, okay, I have no choice, but I can still do this. I can apply myself.
It's like in Peggy Sue Get Married, and she tries to go back. She goes back in the past, and she's not going to marry. She's not going to get pregnant. And then the same thing happened all over again.
Yeah. Right? That was the time machine, right? Was the same theme?
Yeah, I don't know how she ended up with the fire. Does anybody ever try to get her?
Wasn't that Guy Pearce? The Time Machine? One of the films, right? Oh, yeah.
You mean with the memory loss?
No, no. Time Machine.
I think that was The Simpsons. And that was Marge.
He went back. He went back in time because he wanted his, you know, his fiancée not to be frivolously murdered. He kept going back, and she kept through one bizarre circumstance after another. Yeah. So, I mean, to take out the big hammer like you have no choice is useful when it's useful. But there's also the fun of exploring the nuance and texture of your present experience. See the quality of affliction, of imagination, of projection, of things that are going to happen to me. Right? And then the way that we respond. Trying to soothe ourselves, trying to look over here, trying to manipulate circumstances and events to ameliorate or avoid the things that are going to happen to me, right? All somewhat in vain.
So in a sense, like if you have the wherewithal to pay attention to all that, it's sort of a valuable, you know, that's the yoga in a sense, or a valuable thing to do is just being able to kind of watch that process unfold, or how it unfolds, or whatever, as it's occurring.
I imagine it's like challenge, struggle, or fight, or something.
It's more like you're watching all of that, even the like, I don't know how to.
It's strange because your intelligence and capacity of sensitivity is way more magical than you give yourself credit for. We think that in order to learn something, we have to read a book, be mentored, go on an intensive. And so we think that our capacity for brilliant, transcendent sensitivity is reduced to narrow forms of input. We sell ourselves short. We're not yet conscious that our present nature and intelligence is truly transspectral and transcendent and capable of remarkable nuance and penetration that has nothing to do with a book, a conversation, a movie, a vow, nothing to do with it. So the discovery is both analog and digital.
It seems that the boredom level is nowhere near what it used to be because I so enjoy just being
just like analog and digital. I'm missing this for some reason.
I have a book. It's on the line, so I have to search the internet. As a matter of fact, I don't get much done.
You look really happy making that observation, so I figured
it was good. What was the observation?
Analog would suggest the material means that you pick up knowledge of your experience or knowledge of the universe. Digital is, right? quantum entangled.
Okay.
Right. Okay. That there's clearly more going on than you being a human being sitting here with a table, eating dinner in a Panera Bread.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like ho-hum.
Yeah. So that means that suggests as you become more sensitive to your digital transcendent quantum entangled nature and intelligence, that you actually groove on it, not the objects that appear in it, but you groove on it. It grooves on itself. Analog, right, is we think we're learning through experience, through representation, through reference. So then we hunger for the bat gap, for the book, for the retreat, for the high, for the, right? And so what we're doing is we're gobbling up a certain kind of insatiability, gobbling up analog media to feed a certain part of ourselves. But we still haven't, let's say, fully come to rest in our transcendent, autonomous, self-nourishing nature. So the ease that you might see, right, on a statue of a Buddha's face or something, reflects the recognition of one's transcendent and self-nourished, multispectral nature. So that I'm not grappling with symptoms. I'm not grappling with the analog media. The bright is enough. That it's bright is enough. And that's a different texture of experience. It's a different way to inhabit your experience. You can, if you want to say as a human, fine. Okay. Yeah. So what's present, if not that there's anything in particular present or absent, but all that is present, phenomenally speaking, is appearing in the bright. Is appearing in the bright. And you're the bright. It's a shift in loyalty from that of a symptomatic, always afflictable human smallitude to the bright. And so I don't therefore have to have an ideal house, an ideal partner, an ideal car, an ideal spiritual experience. I don't have to have anything ideal, because it doesn't matter. I'm not concerned with the media and the materica of what's appearing in my experience, because I am the bright. So it can do whatever it cares to. But I'm no longer associated with this experiencing from the lens of an afflictable creature whose only relationship with this magnificence is analog or through referential means. It's weird, but it's curiously so. Otherwise, Ramana Maharshi wouldn't have that face. He's got to have that face for a reason. You know, I mean, it's like, oh my God, what does that guy see? I mean, he didn't get that face by reading Tolstoy. But it might have helped. I mean, it's hard to say.
Maybe it's what pushed him over the edge.
Could have. You know, don't know. So this is just a, you know, a way of playing around to tackle the challenge of afflictible emotion, afflictible psychology. a life lived through the lens of fantasy, superficially, as a symptom, a discrete, disparate, lonely or alone symptom. To the revelation of the bright, where all of these afflictions are truly not indigenous. Now, if we try to reach into nirvanitude through mind, through emotion, through comparison, through grasping, through peak experience, we're going to fail.
Because there are preconditions that have to be met before we think.
Did you want to get this light bulb? Is that where you're heading? There you go. It's part of the bright.
Not to the light.
Oh, yeah, they have everything. In the back.
They have connections, you know.
We feel the difference between offering advice or ameliorative to the thin veneer of affliction. But most of human interactivity, right, hangs out there. A relatively thin band, narrow band of fantasy, association, and affliction. And whatever we can get away with in our attempt to ameliorate that affliction. Could be a roofie at a bar or a rock and roll concert or, you know, all the thousands of ways that...
I don't know,
Melissa,
he doesn't
have any. You do that. It's not my thing.
No, it's all along.
No.
I've been going to the bar with him for a while now. I don't remember anything.
Yeah. You just wake up the next morning, right?
That sign's on the
No, that's just yoga.
She says, hasn't. Or something like that.
About the same dentist or in general. And you're like, who hasn't? When we're dependent, when we become dependent on appearance to satisfy our instinct for realization, for fulfillment, when we become dependent on things appearing in phenomena, we're in trouble.
Actually, my experience has been you end up in trouble when you start withdrawing that dependence. When you get the beginnings of it, and you start saying, I get that that's not ever going to give me what I want.
I cannot go anywhere without being in my house. In my house, you sit in, you know?
You just like to peel off one article of clothing at a time.
Just like live in someplace. I mean, how many times has there been like somebody left something at the party? It's just it's always mine.
Mm-hmm.
Took a stand.
Yeah. From now on, we're going to remind you to leave something behind.
Yep.
Well, that is a kind of trouble.
What did I say? I forget.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. What
it's
did
gone.
You say?
I don't remember.
Oh.
When you start to wake up.
Yeah. When you start to give up that anything's really going to give you anything. Any of those things outside are really going to get you. Even the spiritual pursuit. Like, that was the...
That was the last thing you had.
Yeah. It still feels like I'm still trying to ride that horse a little bit.
Yep.
But even that, I don't know, to me, it's like it just happens so fast, all of it. And I just can't. And I guess that's where the not giving advice part comes in, because it's like, but even that, it happens so fast, I find myself giving advice, and I'm like, oh, well, shit. No, it's not what I meant. You know, it's like everything is so bizarre.
I don't know what's worse, giving advice.
Were you giving advice?
It's just bizarre. It's too bizarre to like say. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, that doesn't even make sense to me. Like, giving advice. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what just came out of my mouth or why or what it meant.
Once you turn the corner, and that could take a lifetime as well, right? Because you could turn the corner at 2 years old and spend the rest of your life hungering for the sacred and having a hard time finding any friends along the way. A lot of people have that experience, being, you know, isolated in their community, in their family, in their church, in their workplace, in their relationship, because they have a strong inclination to apprehend the sacred, and it's steep and uphill, right? It seems like there's very, very few resources for camaraderie.
There's a lot of snake oil sales.
Absolutely.
You'll find lots of those.
Yeah.
There are 9 dozen nowadays.
Yes.
I've been one of them.
It's part of the drill, you know. If one is suffering and one goes to a snake oil salesman for a certification, then one becomes an extension of multi-level marketing approach to snake oil sales. We enroll each other.
But there is a difference between being really clear that your business is ameliorating suffering in this dream world versus helping to wake people up. Somebody came to me and said, I want to wake up. I wouldn't offer it more. But if they want just to help with the suffering here, and it seems to help, it works. It helps. I use it.
Yeah.
If I have something I need a doctor for, I go to a doctor.
I smoke marijuana all the time.
Wow.
I get my hands on it.
Yeah.
Just unfortunately, it's last night.
I like to shop for cars.
I like the sofa. I like water and
fun. Somehow I feel soothed by the presence of car salesmen.
That's pathetic.
Well, they ask me stuff about my life.
Now you need to see a therapist.
You know? Suzanne. Well, what are you driving now? Oh, Chevy.
I go to the massage parlor with a happy ending.
Happy ending works.
She's on it. Now we can smoke a newbie and go together. And then think, yeah, that's the high. That's like, yeah, church.
At a certain time or stage of one's curious pursuit, we're ready to hear a different message, which is not one that fits within the bandwidth of being an afflictable being seeking superficial remediation. You really want to open the lens very wide. And you can't offer that view to someone that's in recovery for 6 months. You know, just leave it alone. But if you're of the nature to offer that view or participate in that view, wrangle that view, play with it, then that's where you hang out. That's where you're playing now. And it's respectful, compassionate, dare I say, that you don't impose a multispectral view on someone that doesn't have a crack in their cosmic egg yet.
It only just bounces back at you.
Yeah, right? I mean, so our habit is we're loyal to mind. Where do we go for default orientation? Yes? What's the default for you to have an orientation for your present experience? You go to mind.
Mind comes to us.
Yeah? There's, yeah, it's sticky, right? I mean, one would like to be sitting down in a, right, kind of unafflicted manner. And mind, right, will often come racing for your attention. And that's the, if there's a padlock, that's the one.
What do you mean? Lock to unlock?
Yeah. If Peter Brown talks about noticing, that's... And there's levels to that, of course, right? So, at a practical level, noticing is a way of reminding yourself that you don't have to go to mind as the default position or the default relationship for experiencing.
I actually, when in the midst of mind, the idea of, I'm that tree,
Yeah. It's too late.
I mean, I could try, but...
Yeah. So the yoga then, right?
I think you just have to lie back and don't talk for like this. Otherwise, it's just kind of like the King of England or whatever.
If one is in the fixity of a profound, call it afflictive wave, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Just leave it
you
alone.
You can't. You can't do anything.
Just suffer. What the fuck? Just suffer.
Yeah.
Just rail, rage.
This whole thing,
beat yourself up. Don't. I mean, in other words, even give yourself a complete break from having to fix or change your present experience. It's like, oh my God, this is so bad. I hate myself more than I hate everybody else. Okay, just go down.
I mean, it'll pass.
Big deal. Yeah, or not.
Or not. Well, I don't know.
So far, here you are today. This is the leading edge of the culmination of your adult life. Everything prior to now is more or less past. Otherwise, you'd be in a mental institution. And you're not far from one here at Panera Bread. Yeah, wherever I go, I always need to know where the nearest inpatient unit is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's an app. Some people look for a meeting. Some people look for an inpatient unit.
The other night when I was laughing at the recording of Tuesday Night, and I got a little glimpse of, oh my God, I could laugh myself into complete insanity. It's pretty good.
Actors does do that Tuesday Night.
You're not going to eat that weird little piece of bread?
No, that's the chewy part.
I don't know
what
you did to it, but...
There's butter in the milk if you want.
I don't even know if this could be butter.
You have to squeeze the butter into your mouth while you're chewing on the doughy part, and they'll somehow mix together.
Now the outside got all hard.
Come on, you've done it.
It's good to make it into like a ball.
Come on, you've done it. Yeah, we're doing the white bread ball thing.
Everybody did that. There wasn't much to do in our town. We had to make balls.
Yeah, if you lived in the city, you're up in like, yeah.
Rather than go to 1,000 points in time where you were overwhelmed and nothing would work, start fresh.
Okay with that? Nice.
Yeah. Right. Start fresh.
I wish you guys were there when I wasn't looking.
Sorry.
You're never there when I'm afflicted.
Yeah, really. Group shot.
I was talking about how the mind can just like terrorize all the evidence from the past looking into the future, and oh my God, I'm going to be in a bad spot. Yeah, this might be difficult. What if you're doing today? No evidence, nothing real. Just stories of the past, like, oh my God, I better be afraid of the future. And then you walk through it, it's like, see,
it's
a problem. It's
constantly like nothing happened. That's like the real nothing happened. Like, you see, like, you get all worked up about something, it passes, and you're like, here I am. Like, nothing fucking happened. There's absolutely nothing happened. It's like...
it's all arbitrary affliction.
Yeah. You're like, okay. So...
they're coming to behead me or something. You know, they're coming.
Yeah, I had that for a long time. They're just going to show up and take me away.
Jolly old England, my ass. They're going to take your head off.
Don't think of England, whatever you say.
Yeah.
Come on. I've seen it before.
Now if you're Anne Boleyn.
No, that's France.
It's easier not to think of Tucson.
Yeah.
Don't fight it.
Yeah, they say that.
and say the same thing about when you're in the Allosaurus's mouth. Never works.
Yeah. And then it happens, and you're like,
the Allosaurus always bites right through, clean through.
Mm. Good shake just to break the neck.
Really hard. Yep.
Was talking about having little dinosaur arms.
Somebody needs therapy. It's probably him. Little nubby arms. Why can't they have such little nubby arms?
Goofy
thing.
Why bother with arms?
What did they even do with those things? I mean, they mostly pick things up with their mouth.
Yeah,
was that just like, could they even get to any...
What do you think it was, remnants from when they crawled out of the ocean?
Maybe it's had disappeared. It's weird. I was thinking about that the other day. It's funny. I'm like, why did they even have those little nubs? What the hell were they doing? What are they good for?
To entertain us on the big screen.
You should start a new website. Ask Nirsagadatta. Dear Nirsagadatta, why did those dinosaurs have those nubby little arms?
So does anybody know why they had the little nubby arms, or no?
Ask Harry Renard.
Come on. Yeah, was it in your book?
Flycatchers?
Gigantic mouth. Flycatchers.
We can Google it. Somebody has Siri. You know what's weird is when you go to Google a question, your auto fills in by all these other people that asked it. I'm the only person who's had this question. It's up there already.
It's disturbing. You're like, oh, I guess I'm not as sick as I thought.
Dark and take a little while. Let's do our iPhones.
How do I feel with my book itself?
It's filling that one in quick. You just type in like my and it's like flick itself? Is that what you want?
What was Princess Diana's favorite
color? We left off with just letting it have you. Just letting it have you. It's good. There's something easy about letting it have you. Be an utterly incompetent at work. Something happens. Leaving things around. Yeah. Running through the airport because I walked away from a piece of luggage in Philadelphia. And then having to go running back to get it.
You were at the Philly airport going to
play? No, it was after I'd landed and come back. And I'm literally running and I can see myself. I'm like, upset about this.
You landed
in Philly, stopped, went outside to have Dave pick me up. Ended up on the phone with him. And I was in the wrong spot. I had to go someplace else. I got flustered. I left something sitting there and I walked away from it. And then I didn't quite have the presence to figure out where it was.
That's a good idea in an airport.
I got a laptop in it and everything, yeah. So...
Or just, you know, how they think there's bombs.
Oh, yeah. Like, checking with security, they're like, well, the sniffer dogs probably aren't done with it yet. I'm like... But I'm running, and I'm realizing this is really kind of funny. I'm, like, laughing at myself as I run. I'm laughing at my... There's a piece of me that's laughing at the totally freaked out, overwhelmed piece. Doesn't take it seriously. It's kind of cool. I eventually settled down and found this stupid bag of pussy. But I didn't take it that seriously. I tried, but it didn't quite stick.
What you do with your... call it practical or day-to-day experience is really of such little concern. But, you know, people that like to... Sorry, that's got a technical question about a light bulb. You know, this a report from a recently enlightened person that has to share freely with how enlightenment has changed him or her for the better. You're like, what? What the fuck are you talking about? You see, even the fetish of enlightenment is expressed or trumpeted through trivial pursuits or the amelioration of affliction. Like, who cares? To travel or plumb the depths of your transcendent nature, your brightness, and be absolutely concerted, disconcerted, unconcerted, uber-concerted with what appears in phenomenality to your benefit or your detriment. Yeah? What else you got? So, realization is not an ameliorative.
But I want evidence that something is different. I'm always looking for evidence that something is different. Give me the evidence.
Well, that... See, that's a way of going back to mind, at loyalty to mind, to tell you the truth about your present experience. It can't.
And be able to relate it to some other imaginary truth that it made up.
That's all it can do. All mind can do is try to create confidence in air guitar. And that's why you can't really find anything.
Mind is an air guitar.
Mind is air guitar. I play really... He plays a really mean air guitar.
That's what... The little arms are for.
That's why dinosaurs have little arms. We figured it out.
They could probably play a mean air guitar.
So they could have air guitar.
Because they gotta keep that head. They gotta pull it in. Because that head's too...
You can hold a...
I like it.
Is it a harmonica as well?
No, the head's like this far away from the little tiny arms. That's why the only thing that's air guitar... Okay.
It's not easy, but it's the easiest thing. If this isn't anything, if it's not about anything, then how do you bundle all of this stuff, all of this affliction or the release of affliction in your so-called psycho package and turn that into some kind of referential assertion? That's what evidence seeking is. When mind goes in search of evidence, all it's doing is promulgating and puffing out more representation, more reference, trying to associate or insist upon relevance, reality, and comparison and measure to place itself in the context.
Full-time job. It's all always do.
And it's like,
how do you not buy it? You know, it's like, want to buy a watch, want to buy a watch. Real.
Yeah.
I'm buying it every day, all day. What? There's nothing I can do to stop buying those watches. It's funny because we've talked about this enough. I seem to be living with a mind-held notion of what the world is now, and it doesn't tell me shit about the reality. It's just a mind-held notion. Like, remember, it's not causal. It's just a mind-held notion. It doesn't do much.
The yoga is to return. Doubt that you've ever departed from this. Let's say with sobriety.
You mean with enough sanity not to end up in the hospital?
You shift. Let's say there's an atmosphere of awareness. Right? You're wonderfully disembodied. You're basically kind of floating in space, like, what's up? One way you can go is through the reference field of mind, which is just a million lies. And try to make a million lies into something that you can align with, to place yourself in a frame of reference, spatially, temporally, physically, personally, spiritually, mentally, financially, emotionally, sexually, etc., etc., etc. Right?
Your whole portfolio.
The portfolio of you. So let's come back to the same demarcation point, which happens to be right now. Right? Right here, right now, is the perpetual demarcation or departure lounge. This is the lounge. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard not to have a big ego when you're listening to the Kinks.
Yeah, it's like, what'd you just say? Are you talking to this?
Here in the departure lounge, you don't need to pick up a magazine. It truly is a profound but curiously simple shift from scrapbooking in the departure lounge by picking up every magazine you can find and storyboarding your life and all of the relevancies that you think apply to you. That's mind. That's what we were saying last night. Interest. You have an interest in phenomenality. So you want to find out what it is. So you pick up every magazine you can and cut out little things and create a scrapbook about yourself. And that doesn't stop, nor does it need to. And you become strangely acquainted with your own present experience as the bright. As the non-referential plenitude in which everything appears. And that association, you don't build confidence in that association through mind. You build confidence in that association through texture, feeling.
Before interest, get attention. Not a practice, but just notice.
Well, it's engulfing, actually. You know, at some stage we might say, I'm crawling toward or interested in, and, right, I'm on the lookout. And that's so. You can be on the lookout. And as your confidence in this deepens, through no particular effort of your own, then you find yourself being chased by or engulfed by what this is. And that's different. It's more endocrine. You know, you're triangulating bliss through your organ and endocrine system. And bliss does touch the mind. It touches everything. It certainly touches the mind. There is no bridge. But the texture is your feelingness. You know, so you can use your organs. You can use your breath or your diaphragm, your adrenal glands, your pineal or pituitary, thymus, to feel this. That's what hatha yoga is all about. Asana, pranayama, is all about shifting from ephemeral locution, mind as ephemeral locution, to resonance through the prana, movement of prana, and the sensitivity or the triangulation of the glands. That's what it's about. And from the kundalini point of view, if you arouse your ojas and it travels upward through the ida, pingala, shushumna channels and then lights up, you know, your view like a Christmas tree, then that's another cooperative or complementary model of shifting from ephemera to texture, and the texture wakes up.
And that model makes you think, if I just do enough yoga and I just do it right, then I can get it. And
yes.
I don't think that's it.
No, no.
But it can't be it.
No, it's not. That's not.
I've been doing yoga for 20 years.
Yeah, no, it's...
I don't think it's anything. I don't expect anything of it.
Well, again, it depends on a lot on who you've studied with.
Nobody.
You know what I mean? And so you can learn a lot solo, you know, of course. But it also is how you approach it, right?
She's like wondering, who should I study with now?
I haven't had any luck.
There are yogis that know the vibratory pattern of the bright, of endocrine, right, sensitivity, pranic sensitivity. That's what the Buddhists do. You know, jhanic practices are the same. Breath meditation is the same. It's a vehicle for refining consciousness to such profound subtlety that this becomes or reveals as profoundly hypnagogic.
It feels like when you're really in that, it feels like you're shortening the bridge between sort of regular consciousness and what you supposedly are looking for. It seems like the bridge gets shorter.
You're paying attention to the gap.
Mind the gap.
See, when we're lost in thought, we aren't paying any attention to the gap. We're in proliferation.
So
proliferation is not intimate, because proliferation is downstream. It's a kind of hysteria.
Why are we sitting in an area eating white flour when we should be shortening the bridge, if that actually works?
We are.
It's just a different version of a different trick.
There's all kinds of yogis. The hatha form, the pranayama form, this is the left-handed bed.
Left hand bear claw in mouth.
This is the way of the bear claw.
Quick and satisfying.
Yeah. Presence is the yoga. Presence is the bridge. Presence permits you to mind the gap.
This is an offering of an invitation to presence. Not requiring
breathing like a dog.
Breathing, not requiring hours of meditation and silence for days. This is a different way to bridge the gap.
Yeah, that work's all been done.
Yes, it has.
You know, if someone is real high on eight-limbed Ashtanga yoga and applying themselves diligently to it, then, you know, that's where they are. That's where they wish to be, need to be. Right? That's the strata of their conscious exposition. But the subtlety of it is not limited to the mat or the alternate nostril breathing or the tantra. However that might be practiced.
It seems to me that this is way more wide open than any of those paths.
Yes, it is.
Much less apt to be sidetracked down the road that takes you out. Much less.
Could be. Well, that's why it's demanding. You know, that's why I play the role of designated driver.
Get very far when you're not alive. It's not quite the same.
Well, in time, you know, in time, you occupy yourself with more mischievous consciousness. And maybe you're less likely to spin into a reverie of he said, she said, and then, you know, build on a cooperative hysteria.
Well, there's less artificial structure here.
Yeah.
It's not like we've all arrived and rolled out our mat and we're going to start, you know, with some meditative silence and then we go through the drills. It's not like that. The door is wide open to go wherever the hell we want. We can talk about whatever we want. So it's really much more... More choice.
When you give a horse a big pasture, they tend to relax. If you fence them in too close, you know, they start getting a little nervous.
We kind of do that to ourselves. Like, that's the, it's like, it does seem to be an individual kind of, exploration into where you want to go for the, you know what I mean? Like, whether you're interested in partaking in the, what did you do today and how you want to take it and play with it.
I think for the most part, what you're pointing to is strong enough that that's way more interesting than the other shit that you bring to the table that you're sitting with. You.
When it is, it is. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's right.
Even if you're on a Star Trek game. That's classic Tuesday.
If there's a fulfillment to be had, well, that fulfillment would be you. Now.
And that's all that other stuff is always about. If something is not fulfilled in you, or you're looking for validation or whatever, then that's where it goes.
Where can anything go? Where can the most exotic spiritual practices and asceticisms go? Well, here's good.
Yeah.
Where do they go?
They sound comfortable, though. I might like those. No, I don't think
so. A codpiece and a flute sounds nice. But then that would be a Jethro Tull concert.
I don't know what. I don't know where I'm going. You grew up in Arizona. I'm wearing them right now. Are they comfortable?
A smile.
Yeah, you look comfortable. I think you're enjoying those.
Well, I guess, you know, when you're in India, it's not exotic to you if you're from there, right?
What is exotic?
You know, like, being a pair of bread is not very exotic. It's not here, but maybe 100 years from now, people look back and go, what are those people of pair of bread doing? Like, the Gnostics.
Yeah, and then we'll be like, I really wish I was at Panera Bread instead of this whatever.
Gnostic gathering at Panera Bread.
It sounded so great.
It's a challenge to find a motive when you're it.
I'm going to get water. I don't want to take all your water. Do you guys want water?
You know, when you're suffering, there's a lot of motive, right? Hopefully there is, to not suffer when the time comes. I mean, people drink and do stuff that they do belligerently, angrily, accusatorily for decades before they're like, wait a second, hold it, you know, it's me. That's big, right? If I'm immersed in projection and transference and having addictive soiree, then I'm not minding the gap. This is not about me. I'm just engaged in, you know, medicating what's wrong with everybody else. Right? It's fucked up. What if bliss? I know it's a selling point, but what if it were not dependent upon anything? Holy shit. Don't you think? What if bliss were not dependent upon anything. But that your own nature is just bright. We're no longer motivated for amelioratives or interventions of a spiritual kind. I'm not interested in either. Not an ameliorative for my affliction or an intervention that I could call accomplishment or attainment. Because bliss is not dependent on anything. It's not the consequence of anything. This is bright, right out of the gate. It's kind of like the Marrakesh Express. Shades. Now, this is a shift because rather than negotiating with mind from a Zen or a Buddhist or a yogic point of view, you don't need to negotiate with mind. You're just...
Your mind is like a turtle, so it doesn't negotiate.
Your transcendence, the confidence that builds up in your inherent transcendence, will take care of mind. So if this is mind, and mind is just myth, I mean, it's just, right, it's a sparkalicitude happening in whatever we call this. It's not really a thing. We use mind as a shorthand for a profound inventory of symptoms, of subtle activity. Somatic, emotional, spiritual, psychiatric, universe creation. I mean, huge what's going on within the subtle confines of the privacy of your psyche. It's huge, and we call that mind. I mean, how could we use four letters to refer to... You got to be kidding me, right? And so when we use four letters to refer to you got to be kidding me, then it appears as if mind is a thing. Just like when you point at the moon and go, the moon. There's no moon. There's no mind. So then it's possible not to negotiate, navigate, tackle, ameliorate, medicate, improve upon, get out from under, transcend, or do anything with it or about it. Because there is no mind.
So why take it head on?
That's right.
Just let it do its thing, do what it does, seemingly.
That's right.
Be what it is, and
aren't you so
head on is like not helpful.
Aren't you already so, confidently so? Without the mind telling you so? Aren't you so? Not as the result of the mind whispering anything in your ear. That's the yoga. Oh, I am so.
Sarah, your order's ready.
Where's the fight? This is the engulfing part. Presence engulfs itself. Is itself radiantly so, nourishingly so, obliteratingly so. The mind doesn't have a chance. But I'm not talking about something in your future. is not good news for your future.
How about now?
That's the intimacy. That's minding the gap. Because if you're radiant and nourished beyond imagination, well, that has to be true now, not in your future. So that's an invitation, right? That's an invitation to feel yourself occupy present experiencing from a non-specific, multivalent, textural appreciation. That's a kind of an intimacy to speak about that, right?
To allow any amount of space outside of just the mind-mind dialogue is even, that's like hard. And if, yeah, and it's kind of intimate. I think it's like the second that happens, you're like, ah! Say something. Anything.
Yeah, we get freaked out.
Get human quick.
Yeah. At least look away.
Well, you know, maybe as a species we're all a little bit shy. So, I'll go be bright in my bathroom. But I don't know if I want to walk outside that way.
Yeah. So you got to put on your little, okay, you know? We're going outside now.
I mean,
there
Ramana,
might be other people.
Yeah, Ramana Maharshi was publicly bright, right? Nirsagadatta was publicly bright. Maybe Peter Brown, you know, publicly bright. Where, you know, the default is kind of being shy and rude. Shy but rude. That's how we roll.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone comes to visit us from another planet, shy but rude. Yeah. So it is a little bit intimate. It's a little bit strange to inhabit your present experience as brightitude. And not skulk away from it.
I think it's so big that we just sort of like don't want to see it. It's too big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is big. It's big, it's small, it's macro and microcosmic. It has no measure or boundary whatsoever. It's playful beyond imagination. Scooby-Doo mystery.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. I'm like, yeah, this is good.
Ghosts in the attic with Scooby-Doo.
Very dramatic.
Discover that your listening is, instead of being primarily auditory, is universal, right?
Yeah. Like
your listening is spontaneously, concomitantly multi-sensual. Yeah, and you needn't focus, though this will focus, but you needn't focus on any particular sense packet, photon. You needn't focus on any particular sense packet or photon, which happens to include thought. Right? I mean, is the light in the room bothering you? Is the sound bothering you? Is whatever feeling you're having as a creature on a chair bothering you? Why is thought bothering you?
Why does thought bother you?
Check it out.
It's like hemorrhoids.
Usually, like, you know, it goes from here to here. I mean, it's all...
Thought appears in your experience just like all other facets of this diamond. But somehow we associate with thought as self. The light in the room is not self, is it? No, it's just a well-lit room. Stuff on the PA system is not self, is it? No, it's, you know, the pleasant or unpleasant musical interlude. What's self? If you taste something, is that self or a good flavor? If you smell something, is it a pleasant or unpleasant aroma, or is it self? If you can do this with the table, is that self? And if you're thinking, is that self? Isn't it a little bit weird? All of these so-called sense energies are occurring. Which of these do you associate with as self?
Well, I mean, it's just you've heard the thought, there's thought, and physical sensation with it, so it has a stronger...
It's the link. The link of thought energy by itself could be not a problem. Thought energy associated with somatic identification, and call it, you know, right, gripping or resistance, whether chakrally or biophysically, shortness of breath, right, apprehension, anxiety, resistance, tightening, right, appearing with thought through the emotive or the somatic systems, is hard to refuse as self.
Harder, yeah.
Yeah, harder to refuse. The light in the room is like, no biggie. But think something or feel something.
Irritating, you know, flashing lighting.
Can be.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, it can be, yeah.
Can be.
But it's not identified as self.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Irritation in the somatic zone, accompanied by afflictive thought, lends itself to self.
Yeah. If thoughts were just like, even if they were negative thoughts, they weren't.
And they are. Thought appears to appear somewhere between the ears, which is, and you have to attend to thought, right? Thoughts totally gibberish unless you're attending to it with, call it awareness or who knows what it is, so that the monologue that's going on between your ears that's not spoken, right? That's what we're calling thought. Referential pattern making is occurring, call it in mind or brain or somewhere between the ears, and is being seen or felt as, right, thinking, as referential word forms. A story's being told. And that story being told, associated with the somaticization of other vibratory elements, is self. I, me, mine, body, separate from. And it's a little strange because, you know, that's not self. Van Morrison's not self.
Maybe Van Morrison.
Yeah, on a good day. You see, so you look at the...
I guess because we associate ourselves with our bodies, we just
And when you look at, and yoga is obviously another good tool for examining what the body is and isn't, what the boundary field is of somaticization or association or identification with somaticization, is there really body? Strange things happen. Yeah. Like if you push your head forward, right, and the only thing you can see is your glasses.
Yeah.
Where's your body? Yeah. Yeah. On having no head. Yeah. I mean, really, you're just kind of an orbit of...
Yeah.
Whoa. Totally floating.
And it's easy to do that now.
You're MC, you're imagining those. Yeah, which is fine. You know, you're imagining those.
Yeah.
And by imagining them, there's also a certain kind of bracing association that accompanies the imagination. Like, well, it's okay now, but any minute now, I could drop my yogurt. And it's going to be a shitstorm.
I'm really trying not to brace, you know. Like
yeah.
Starts like a pot a week.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
You know, what's it like to,
right.
You know, thought just not to brace.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know.
That's right.
That's only a like a week old. But, anybody else? And it's weird to just not brace.
No, it's a not really well dressed
community. Please,
have
the intention of
not seeing
where
it's gone. Exactly. Because he's been here since before we got here.
No,
never saw me.
Right? We need to break.
He's just been seeing that I haven't even looked at
from the car. Right?
Not
exactly
like the car. I think that was probably a ghost, so.
He doesn't eat.
Sorry.
Did you photograph him?
There was a well-dressed ghost. She did.
Did he come out?
Oh, is this like you would know if a ghost would come out or not?
No, I'm wondering if he did.
You're talking about vampires.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Don't relate this to Dracula.
I just want to see if the photo worked or not.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
where was the ghost?
Behind you.
This guy looks exactly like a guy.
He kind of looked albino, I see, too, so it really works well.
Even the way he was sitting.
Yeah.
He didn't look up the end.
I know.
I have a...
The guy played on the school all the time?
Yeah.
I used to know him. He's dead.
He's dead.
He just doesn't know it.
He's trying to be as cavalier as a fruit, but I had to get a picture.
Yeah.
I was curious as to what he was.
Maybe we're dead. He's alive.
I think now he's wandering around the parking lot.
Like the other
I guess that means we're never going to leave this Panera, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is it.
You can check out, but you can never leave.
Spin on top. We'll see if it's fine.
May as well get another cup of coffee. It's going to be a long night.
Good thing we've got some shit to talk about.
We're in the Panera vortex.
So this reflex of bracing is, one could say, worth experimenting with.
Can you stop a reflex?
It's so cold. It's always cold.
No, no, not at all. It's not necessary to stop.
It's necessary
to stop bracing? No, it's necessary to feel. The reason the bracing continues is because you short stop it. You don't let the bracing, you don't allow the bracing to go to full catharsis.
Give the bracing as much space as the hot flashes.
Yeah.
Oh,
it helps.
No, I don't think this would help me. I'd be like, make it stop.
You give the bracing a lot of attention, a lot of loving attention, and you don't even need the loving, fuck it, that's too new age. Yeah, just give the bracing all your attention. Because you see, typically what we do is we're pesky when it comes to bracing. We're evasive. We're always darting.
I feel like I tried to do the exposure, you know, the whole thing. What? Exposure shifted to sort of just trying not to, you know, not bracing or bracing less.
Let the bracing kill you. Let it take you out. Because that's what you have to do with reality.
It's been short stuff. The bracing has been short stuff. Like I'm trying to sell a panic attack.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is not necessarily a conscious strategy.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right. But this, and I'm not trying to place any particular emphasis on bracing. But it's the same thing that we need to do, in big quotes, with bracing, is what we're being invited to do with reality.
Don't touch my apple.
Let it kill you. Right? As long as you're holding out, then you're not allowing reality to kill you.
Go full brace.
Or just whatever is appearing, let it have you. Let it kill you. Let reality kill you. Let it take you out. That's the catharsis. That's the...
What is this about this Bill Cosby? I have no idea. I don't pay any attention here. What the hell do you do?
He's been alleged to be, over the course of years, somewhat of a serial sexual predator and rapist by giving his victims drugs that have, you know, made them unconscious or unable to defend themselves while he has his way with their nubile form.
That's why it works so well with kids, huh?
Yeah. These are just frivolous allegations from opportunistic women that are trying to get money and fame.
The only problem is there's like a bunch of them, right?
Well, one
who knows.
It's a coven of women trying to take down Bill Cosby by making up all of these things. Yeah, it's just
anyway,
a racial issue.
It's a racial issue. They're just trying to keep time because he's a successful
guy. Yeah, I think he's a rapist.
Harvard.
It's obvious.
You want to tell all the sacred cows to come down?
Yeah, come on. Anyone that could put up with kids that much, rapist.
You know what? I think he was giving them Jell-O pudding pops. What was your joke?
Yeah, Jell-O pudding pops, see? I wonder what he was doing with the kids in the Jell-O pudding pops. That's going to come out later.
We should just do a show like The View.
Yeah, I know. Or The Chew.
Yeah, like
whatever
The View.
That other one
we'll
is.
Just come out.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about
all about food. We could we need a different name on.
We'll talk about contemporary topics in the way that we do.
Then we'll tell our viewing audience
that
this is
happening. That's right.
He's taking us up to, we'd be fined by the, you know, like Howard Stern got fined.
I know, but then we would just spin off into our own realm, like Oprah and him, and they're doing pretty well. So I think this is the plan.
This is
we'll get our hair and makeup done.
This is a maturing process. Your present experience is the brand new expression of your totality, and you could say poetically the culmination of everything that has appeared to appear or occur prior to this culmination of your totality. Here it is. And you don't have to do anything with it, about it, preparatory or otherwise. It doesn't have to resolve into anything. Does not need to justify itself. It doesn't have to turn into something. Really, let it kill you. a very profound way of being with your miracle, being with the miracle of you, without this habit we tend to have of darting away, trivializing, right, minimizing, and darting away from the miracle of yourself. And that's what all the mindfulness meditation is really about. And it's kind of sad that they would use something as luscious as mindfulness meditation and then string it out over days or weeks or months, or the Tibetans will do years long, right, Vipassana isolating retreats. And you're like, what? This is a beatitude nonstop.
It's like being on retreat, like, it's so peaceful. You're like away from other people. You go to the dining table, you have a small
Why you're gonna get bitter, kitten. It's time to get real talks in the Kmart over there, and I'm gonna come. It's gonna be great.
Yeah,
she's gonna be famous.
Yeah,
famous. Awesome.
Bitter kitten rocks.
They probably have really cool bitter kitten pajamas or something.
I don't know.
Because I like to be comfortable. I think pajamas.
I got it from Tom and Lorenzo. They criticize celebrities' fashion, so I took it from that website.
Yeah. Pajamas are fashionable in Kmart.
Well, our friend Stanton put this book together and
was trying to skip past the introduction and what happened when he was four and stuff, but I didn't get that far because I just got it to...
Stan is one of Peter's...
He joins us on the talks, but his name's Stan instead of Stanton.
So he made a book. He's a potter, right? He's a potter and a teacher.
He worked with Peter weekly through Skype.
Okay.
And emails. I mean, he's
like,
you know,
college passionate. He did a project for school.
And so he memorialized the Skype sessions and his notes and the emails and put them in a, what do you call, a compilation.
Something.
A compilation of, you could say, personal process with, you know, Peter.
Okay.
And so I just assisted him in sending that out to the Peter Brown email list. Because he saw a PDF download, so you can...
Did you read it?
I couldn't bear to.
I like that short couple things you sent me before, but 200 something pages is like, oh God.
You know, you're the bright. What are you going to read?
I
don't read much anymore.
See?
I don't even surf the internet much.
You see?
I make little lists of things that seem to be important to keep my life going, and I kind of barely do those.
The most fun metaphors that reach you are the ones that you have. Why read somebody else's?
Actually, I sometimes read books just because they're a real book somebody really, like, can't make into a book. Like, that I would sometimes look at. But
I don't even take, I rarely get through to the end.
The real thrill is yourself. Just as you are.
Yeah, but yourself can also be yourself experiencing yourself reading a book. Or, you know what I mean? I like just some
yeah.
It's like I actually allow myself more freedom on the like, yeah, if I want to spend 2 hours sifting through Facebook, apparently that's okay. I don't care anymore. If that's what I want to do in my morning while I drink coffee for 2 hours, oh well. But it's like, it definitely has a different texture, you know? It's not like I'm looking for anything. I'm just kind of like perusing a bizarre consciousness field. Because that's what it is coming through.
That's
know?
What you're doing, is perusing a bizarre consciousness field.
Right.
Yeah.
I make sure to go on Facebook around the holidays just to tweak myself.
Just to what?
Just to tweak myself and assure myself everybody else has a life and I
don't. Oh, I thought you said tweet yourself. I'm like, oh, jeez. Yeah, I used to do that. You're like, why am I such a loser? How do these people? They have friends and they're taking pictures of people and they travel.
The guaranteed road to my life doesn't match up.
They have a job?
It works every time.
Twitter?
Facebook.
This is your life on Night Sky Song. And it's good.
This is a perfect Night Sky Song song.
Yep.
It's a perfect loiter.
Yeah. It's the high end of loitering. Guy even whistles. On his own record.
He was going to take that
he's so relaxed.
Before he died.
He whistles on his own record.
I think the universe killed him so he couldn't.
He gives so little of a fuck. He's like.
Nope.
Is the song over yet? No? Oh. Yeah, now? Just give me a sign from the control room. It's a quick session. This is the transmission element.